Hi, this is Patti LuPone.
This is Allison Janney.
This is Matt Ballmer.
This is Donna Murphy.
This is Nia Vardalos.
This is Jesse Tyler Ferguson.
This is Beanie Feldstein.
I'm Octavia Spencer.
This is Ben Platt, and you're listening to Little Known Facts with my favorite person on the planet, Alana Levine.
A-OK.
Welcome to Little Known Facts, a podcast where you will hear unfiltered, raw, honest, and uniquely funny interviews with artists you love as they talk about the art they love to make. I'm your host, Ilana Levine.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I heard you needed inspiration. Here's Alana and friends with some revelations. Little known fact of the day. Every little thing's gonna be A-OK. A-OK.
Little known fact about my guest today. Years ago, she noticed Jane Leaves and some other actresses on two shows at the same time. And she thought, I want to do that someday. Well, my friend has manifested this dream, and she's now on two television shows, among many other things. And she is an extremely brilliant artist, and I am so thrilled to welcome Saida Ekolona to the podcast.
A-OK. A-OK.
Hey, everyone. My guest today is Saida Ekolona. Saida is an award-winning theater, television, and film actress. Saida originated roles on Broadway, off-Broadway, in regional theaters, and international theaters. But one of the things I am most proud of her for is her role in the Pulitzer Prize-winning play, Ruined, for which Saida really won every award possible for her role. You can currently see her on television on Bob Hart's Abishola. And she can also be seen as Toni Chapman in A League of Their Own, an extraordinary series. Some of her other TV credits include Snowfall, Better Call Saul, Bull, Kevin Can Wait, Impastor, Scandal, The Haunting of Hill House, Why Women Kill, Room 104, The 100, and Shameless, among many others. And some of her films include Dark Was the Night, Honey Glue, Christian Mingle, The Den, The Taking of Pelham 123, Righteous Kill, and again, many, many others. I am so honored and thrilled to welcome my friend Saida to the podcast. Hello, my darling. How are you?
Hello, love. I'm great. How are you?
I'm so happy to see you. I recently was looking through my wedding album to find a photo of a cousin to show to my mom. And there is the most beautiful photo of your face during the wedding, just shining light and love and radiating kindness. And that's how I think of you, as just this person who brings so much love and good into the world, and a true artist of incredible integrity. And so I have the privilege of knowing you in my personal life, but listeners today don't all have that honor. And so I'd love to kind of share a little bit about how, where you grew up, when the art sort of entered your consciousness, when the idea of like, oh, I want to do this as a grown-up entered your heart and mind. So can you take me back to like young Saida, and where were you?
Okay, well, first I have to say that that photo at your wedding reflected the energy of the entire event. Your wedding was one of my favorite weddings. It was so beautiful. You and Dom just both glowed, and everyone there was just on a high because we were just truly celebrating love. And so thank you. For me, so yeah, I was born in Philadelphia. I was raised primarily in Maryland. We kind of went back and forth between Jersey and Pennsylvania, but ultimately I spent a few more years in Darby, Pennsylvania before we moved to Baltimore, or Baltimore County, actually. My father was a reporter for Philadelphia and a TV station there. And then we moved down to Maryland because he got a job at Maryland Public Television. And he started creating and writing and directing his own shows. One of them was called Consumer Squad. And so I know all my rights as a consumer, but he also started doing industrials, what we call industrials. And that's when he would like involve us, you know, we'd be in the background that, and, but I had been doing plays since I was a kid. I was a pencil in a stationery play because I was so tall. And then when I was in fifth grade,
please tell me there's a picture somewhere.
You know what? I don't think I have it anymore.
All right. Anybody listening, if you were also in the stationery play, we must see images. Thank you. Okay. Moving on.
But I was the wicked stepmother in Cinderella. Cause I, again, being so tall. So I started doing a lot of the school plays. And then when I was around 10, my parents enrolled me in Arena Playhouse. It's the African American Theater Company in Baltimore. And they had like a famed summer camp. And my dad got me in. And so I would just go there every summer and just do, you know, work on movement, do voice, do dance, do acting and everything. And then so I started doing it more and more in school. And I decided, it just seemed like that was what I was going to do, you know. When I went to college, I was an undeclared major, and so I thought I was maybe going to be a writer. But the first class I took was with my late mentor, and it was called Who's Afraid of Edward Albee, because she was having an Edward Albee festival. And I was the only freshman in that class, and she was like, listen, we have auditions this weekend. And I went in and I auditioned for this play called The Man Who Had Three Arms, which happened to be a very obscure Albee play that he had directed on Broadway maybe like 5 years prior, and took it off Broadway after 17 performances and said, no one's ever gonna be allowed to do this play again. Well, it's like a three-person play. It's very existential.
Yeah.
She went up to visit Albee with the actor she wanted to play the lead. They spent 2 days there. Albee said, yes, you can do it. And so I didn't know this, so I just auditioned for a play, and boom, that's how it started. And then she asked me to be a part of the non-existent theater program, and so I helped build it. So that's the small version of how it all started.
When you talked about your childhood, you mentioned a couple of times that you were really tall. Therefore, yeah. You played a pencil, adult yes. roles, even though you were young. Tell me what being really tall meant to you then. How did you see being so tall?
I liked being tall. I didn't really know what to do with my body. And I'm ultimately only like 5'9" and a half. But being that tall for so long, you feel like you're bigger. You know?
So,
but I was also very shy. So I was kind of like sometimes hunching over, you know, to try to hide and try to lower myself to equal to somebody, which is now in retrospect, that was ridiculous. But, you know, yeah, just a tall kid.
So when you finish school and right away are sort of invited to be a part of creating a company, and sort of landing in this world of theater. And you mentioned having a mentor, and I know how important it is to have these people who early on in our lives go, you're special and I see you and I wanna work with you even mm-hmm. outside of school, which is such an incredible thing, right? To have mm-hmm. a professor actually then in the real world wanna continue to collaborate with you.
Yeah.
When did you I think you, so when Sayida and I were talking about my wedding, I'm married to an actor named Dominic Famusa. Many of you listeners know that. And I believe you and Dominic met, was it the Humana Festival or Lou? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So mm-hmm. he was doing tape. What play were you doing?
Anton and Show Business.
Okay. So you're starting to work regionally, right? Sort of
yes.
early on. Did you go to New York kind of once this company sort of was established and you're working with this theater company, what brought you to New York originally?
Well, it wasn't a theater company. She wanted me to help her with the theater major at undergraduate.
Okay. So to develop a curriculum and a...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. To develop part of the theater curriculum. My major was, basically an independent study program. It was theater, African American studies, and women's studies. I also called it the All About Me. But I actually went to National Theater Institute and at the Eugene O'Neill for part of my senior year. And then it was like, should I go to graduate school? And then I decided to go and audition and ended up going to University of Minnesota. And then I spent a year at the Guthrie, Garland Wright's last season. And then I was like, you know, it's okay here. I'm too cold. If I'm really going to do this, I got to move to New York. And then I moved to New York.
As a young woman who had lived in the DC area and Philly, was it culture shock going to Minnesota?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I didn't expect, there are a lot of Ethiopians in Minnesota because of the refugee camp.
I don't know. Can you explain more about the refugee camp?
Well, there were a lot, when they were bringing a lot of Ethiopians over to America, they sent them to, it's outside of Minneapolis. I can't remember where.
Okay.
Near the Mayo Clinic, near there.
Okay.
And so then they would help, heal them within their health and then introduce them to American society and say, here's a job. This is what you can do. Introduce them to a lot of different resources. So but the thing is, for the Ethiopians, I'm like, this is such a culture shock in terms of weather and climate.
Right.
But there were generations there. So also the climate was a shock. And also the passive aggression. Oof. That was...
That, you really experienced that.
Oh, absolutely. I actually adopted it. In fact, my mother, after me being there around 8 months, you know, the word interesting is used a lot when you don't really want to comment on something out there. And so I would keep saying interesting. And my mother, who is a New Yorker, was like, what the hell is, why are you saying interesting all the time? Tell me how you feel. And then I said, oh, so she broke me out of it. But a
and
lot
is
of
that
culture,
a Midwestern trait? Like, or it was might, that?
It might be, but I know it's specific to, I know it happens in Minneapolis a lot.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
Interesting.
Interesting. So what would you say, you know, there are so many breaks that happen for people. We call them lucky breaks. I don't know if luck is part of it as much as finally. So when did the first thing happen that made you feel like I was right to come to New York?
Well, it actually happened in Minneapolis. Mm. I was in this play called The Firebugs that David Gordon, the choreographer, had directed. And Lola Poshelinski was in it with me. And on opening night, I met Linda Chapman, Lola's partner. And Linda said, hey, I'm with New York Theater Workshop. When you get to New York, give me a call. I can introduce you to our casting director. And, you know, hey, maybe you can do some readings. I'm like, okay. And I felt like, and so I did. And so Jerry started putting me in readings and workshops, and I had never really worked on a new play before.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, and so I got to go to a lot of their retreats, etc. And so I was building my community, or my artistic community, and a lot of friends. And I felt like that was definitely when it was like, okay, I made the right decision in coming to New York. I also mm-hmm. had some friends from the National Theater Institute who had been in New York trying to make it. So I was with them, or I was with New York Theater Workshop people. But yeah, that was when I was like, yeah, this is great. And then my agent started sending me out on regional theater as well, which I hadn't realized was an option. So
right.
That was great too.
Did you have, what were your day jobs or night jobs when you came to New York over the years? How did you pay bills?
I worked as a receptionist at an internet trading company, and everybody there was Russian except for me and two other secretaries. Everybody was Russian, and they were down on Wall Street, and I was living in Brooklyn, and I was there for like a year and a half. And then I was a market research recruiter. Everyone loved being my friend because I always got my friends some money for, you know, hey, this is for Kellogg. You want 75 bucks cash? Just act like you like Kellogg products.
Like doing focus groups.
Focus groups, yeah.
Yeah.
But I would recruit people to do the focus groups.
I love that.
Oh, it was so much fun.
I love that.
And I would have to interview them on the phone, and I would kind of like lean into certain answers I would want them to give.
Sure.
Like for
so
De Beers and stuff.
Right.
Absolutely. Cause yeah, they could use $100 or $400
totally.
Sometimes. And receptionist work. I never was a waiter or wait. I never did any kind of waitering in New York. I did
that before. Or catering. Mm-mm. None of that.
Okay. I don't have the patience.
Totally understand.
Yeah.
So what was like when you look back, kind of like, the thing that you felt like I've arrived?
I think when I first did a show at the Public.
Mm-hmm. Were you aware of the Public as a young person? And it's so meaningful.
Absolutely. I mean, when I was in graduate school, Rent had been out. And so, you know, it was on Broadway and we were like, oh my gosh. And then learning about the Public and New York Theater Workshop, I think it was at the Public, actually, that I was like, I think it was the Square. That's when it was like, oh, wow. Because I think also with the Public, like that lobby, it's very special because, you know, there are all these different shows going on and you might see somebody you haven't seen in a long time. It immediately lends itself to community. And that's what I've always felt that about that place.
Is community what you were looking for? Like, mm-hmm. What was it in terms of like, I want to devote my, you know, my career to telling stories? Like, why?
Why?
Yeah. Why did you want that?
Because I think it's important to share these stories with other people. And it's another way of learning about yourself and others through these stories. You know, I was very, very shy, but opened up, and I can immediately identify with shy people, you know,
mm-hmm.
And I can say to them, hey, this is the way I express myself. How do you express yourself? Mm-hmm. I feel also, I'm the oldest of six, so I'm used to having a lot of people around me. And I feel like just being around all these other people, even if you're not in direct communication with them, you can always learn something, you know?
Did you feel empowered having a lot of siblings?
Empowered. You know what? I think so. That's a good, I've never thought about it like that, but I guess so. Because we can be a force, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? There's mm-hmm. a lot. Yeah, I do remember when I was like in graduate school, I called every one of them up and said, you know, even if we weren't related, I would still want to know you.
That's incredible.
Yeah, yeah. Because they're very interesting people. We have this very similar sense of humor. They invigorate me. They inspire me. I'm just so curious about what they do and their reasons for it. And there's no judgment. It's been really great to grow up and not hold them to be the person that I knew them to be when they were a child.
To allow them to evolve.
Absolutely.
As well.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun.
You know, you're having a moment where the thing a lot of people want. I mean, you're such a theater animal. I don't know if your goal was to be on television originally, but that's certainly what has evolved in recent history. Like literally today, you're on two shows at once, which is incredible. In two such different kinds of shows, but also for you especially, like in both shows, playing a parent and sort of negotiating, you know, one is a period piece and one is not a period piece, but sort of negotiating those relationships and just being fierce in both of those shows. When were you able to sort of, I know I heard Dominic on the phone with you one day and I heard like the name Mark Cherry. And then I hear like Chuck Lorre, like there are certain people who are like brand names, like household names in the world of producing and writing television. And when we think about it, there are very few people whose names we know on that side of the camera, but they're like really famous for non-actors, I would say. So like, can you talk a little bit about relationships and where these relationships were born with these two? And there are more, I know, who love working with you so much.
Well, I was in a pilot of Mark's called, what did they end up calling it? Oxblood or something. And it was because it took a long time to figure out what the name was.
And they came up with Oxblood.
I think so.
Okay.
I think so.
Why not?
I have the hat somewhere, but Reba McEntire was the lead in it. It was really great. And we thought it was going to go and it didn't. But Mark, and it was the first pilot I had done, but Mark and I just had this fun banter with one another, and he would invite me over and a friendship began. We're actually working on something right now. It's been really beautiful. And Chuck, I don't have that kind of relationship with Chuck. I'm just, you know, hired on the show, but I think it's really through working together, because I've always asked that. I'm like, how do these people know each other? And it's through either working together or somebody being married to somebody else, or sometimes it's just purely, hey, I like your work, let's hang out. So
were you shooting Bob Hart's Abishola and A League of Their Own at the same time, or were those spread that you were?
Yeah.
So you're like bopping back and forth.
Yeah. In August, we started League of Our Own in July of 2021. And then in August, that's when Bob Hart started again. And so I had to go back and forth a few times until I wrapped League of Their Own. And I just wanted to say this. You said something about me being on two shows at the same time and very different characters. That is what I wanted. See, because when I didn't see myself on TV, not to say I didn't see any African-American women, but I did, but they were very skinny. They weren't curvy. They didn't have bodies. And so I was like, oh, psh, nobody wants me on TV, except for I saw Lisa Nicole Carson, and she was Ally McBeal's roommate, and she was Eric LaSalle's baby's mama on ER. So I was like, wait a minute, she's on two different shows, on two different networks, how can that be? And then Jane Leaves was on Frasier and on Murphy Brown. And I was like, you can do that? You know what, I want to do that. And it wasn't until 5 years ago that I remembered that that's what I wanted to do. And so I started chanting about that. I was like, you know what, that's what I'd like to do. And last year I realized, oh my God, I'm doing it.
Can you talk to me about that? What it is like to have no shame about wanting something, no shame about saying it out loud, because we're so, I feel like we're so worried about saying what we want, as if we'll either jinx it or come off as ambitious, God forbid. So,
right,
women. So can you just talk to that, whatever comes into your mind about this question?
Well, there are so many things. I mean, my family is mostly a spiritual family. We were Muslim for a long time. That's how I picked the name Saida. So I've always known about a lot of different religions and spiritual practices. And then I know that my siblings and I, four of us, we did a mastermind. You know, that mastermind practice where you talk about what you want and you uphold what other people want. And it's fascinating because that was a long time ago and I'm seeing the fruits of the benefits from that. And then I was in this women's group. I took this course called Mama Gina's School for the Womanly Arts. And she talked a lot about listening to yourself and coming up with desires and how women do things differently. And that's when I started to learn about desires instead of goals and to allow myself actually to have desires. Okay. Instead of saying, no, it's got to be this, 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 and this. It's like, you know what? Today I want someone to come and give me a beautiful compliment while handing me a flower. That's what I desire. I desire. And so there's a juiciness about it that just expands your imagination and your creativity that I really loved. But that's how I actually got to LA, because I allowed myself to come back to LA to say, you know what? I want to come and see what happens in the second round, because the first round was horrible, horrible 10 months. And I got into this play that came out here. And then I got introduced to my Buddhist practice by a cast member. And I mean, even this Buddhist practice, it's Erica Gimple. Oh, she's so lovely. I heard that wonderful podcast you guys had.
Angel and person.
She's wonderful. We've met once, but I've been there when she's sung original songs about our practice. She's terrific.
Yeah.
So in learning about my Buddhist practice and learning about this Buddhism, I just started to apply it to my life and to, you know, I'm not chanting to an outside deity. I'm chanting to myself, for myself and for others. And within that, I built a strength, because it's not easy in New York, but my goodness, it is for real here in LA. It's just very different. And you have to sustain yourself some way or somehow in order to just not only keep going, but you have to find what still connects you to your desire to be an actor, to be an artist, because there are so many things that can be in your way, yourself being number one. And so with my Buddhist practice, I've been kind of getting outside of my own way. And there have been a lot of beautiful things and there have been some disappointments, but I've learned from both. And I'm still learning from both. Like I'm able to take on challenges with my Buddhist practice, where before I would like cry or wail, or just, you know, blame somebody else or think that the world is against me. But the world is not against me. The world is for me. And I'm for the world, you know. So I don't get me wrong. I still cry and everything like that. But I know that I'll be learning something from it. I know that this is an expansion of myself. And even like right now, I mean, the expansion of myself from now to like even 3 years ago, it's beyond. I'm just, I'm really thrilled with it.
But the idea that you have found a practice, and it's all fluid, right? Like I could have you on the show in a year and you might go like, okay, on top of my Buddhist practice, I am now also, right? Because everything, there's
absolutely
mastermind there. I was Muslim. I mean, you're probably always Muslim at a certain level. I don't know, or maybe you're not anymore.
Mm-mm.
You're
no.
not. Okay, so no.
but I see what you're saying. We can still grow.
Everything
and
builds
expand.
On. Yes,
absolutely.
That without one practice, you know, each practice informs the other, and how
exactly.
We take little bits and pieces of it. But you know, I just am so in awe of your ability to find ways to always grow, regardless of whether someone is giving you the artistic platform to do it on, and mm-hmm. how do you write also? I feel like you've written a little bit.
I have written a little bit, but actually I need to I mean, I'm working on that project with Mark, but
as a writer.
We're creating something together. We've been doing that for the past year and a half.
So you're learning about, is that for television?
Mm-hmm.
So are you learning about how to write for, is this hour or half hour?
It's hour.
So you're learning that craft.
I'm learning that craft, but actually we're going to be getting to the writing sometime soon. He's a very busy man.
So you're talking story.
Story. We've actually pitched it, which was fascinating.
Tell me about that. Was it over Zoom or was it when people
it was over
were
Zoom.
Still in a room? Okay.
It was over
so
Zoom.
What is that? What happened?
It was great because I got the perfect lead. I've got the perfect partner.
You too.
And he was like, you take care of this part. I'll take care of this part. And I was like, okay. And then—
Do you rehearse?
We did a little bit.
Okay.
We did. I mean, it's like one of these things you always hear about and always like, how do people pitch? And he got his style. And I'm like, oh, okay, I understand his style. I can go right with them. And then, you know, they asked us questions and we answered them on the fly. And it was like, okay, I've got the experience of expanding my explanation of what we want this show to be and the different ideas. And then hearing feedback and saying, oh, let me consider that, because, you know, you need the outside viewpoint.
So were you familiar, was A League of Their Own a movie that you had watched as a younger person? Were you familiar with it?
Yeah, I was familiar with it.
So tell me about when you got this script and what the process was for you to get the role of Tony in this series. How did that happen?
Well, I got sent the script and I read it and I loved the writing and I loved the two different worlds, you know, the one of the Peaches and the one of Max's mm-hmm. world. And I really just liked Tony. I was like, she's a strong mother. She's in the community.
Businesswoman.
Businesswoman. You've got mm-hmm. a very loving relationship between her and her husband. Mm-hmm. I was just really curious as to where it was going to go. So I auditioned for it. And then I had a—
So did they just send you the first episode?
First episode. And the sides.
So you read it. And how did you feel when you first read it?
I loved it. I loved it because, again, it was like A League of Their Own. And I was like, Black people are in this. And then there was the whole LGBTQ. I was like, oh, what are you guys doing? This is interesting.
A lot of lanes. They're driving down a lot of lanes.
A lot of lanes. But it's also like, of course, these worlds existed during the same world of the actual film. Like, mm-hmm. I love this expansion of it. So then I had a chemistry read with Shantae. And I think I was coming down with a cold, but it was just great. It felt like she was my child. We just immediately had this relationship where there was tension, and not tension because somebody dislikes something, but she's coming up, she's growing up. How do you can't parent a 19, 20 year old the same way you do someone who's 10. Where is she going to go? Mm-hmm. What does she want to do with her life? And yeah, those were the kinds of questions that I had. But love that dynamic.
When you did that chemistry read, was that early on in the process? Were you sort of able to skip the line and go right to that? Or are you putting yourself on tape and then auditioning a couple of times? Or was it pretty quick that you were in the mix in that way?
I think it was pretty quick. I think I went to the audition, and then I remember having a chemistry read.
Mm-hmm.
If there was
something before that,
I don't remember.
Okay. And so now you're also on the show, this kind of unbelievably charming, maybe at first glance, like just a sitcom. And then you're like, no, this is dealing with so many issues mm-hmm. that most sitcoms don't. I mean, you're on two. I'm talking about Bob Hart's Abishola, that you're also just finding out that the woman Falake, who plays your daughter, mm-hmm. A Nigerian woman, one of 20, you know, you think six siblings is a lot.
I know.
She got 20, right? Like, it's like unbelievable, her mm-hmm. story. Have you gotten to know her?
Oh, I love her. I love her.
What
She's so great.
Gifted dynamic duo that you are a part of. Like, you're just crushing it in the mother-daughter dynamic on television right now. So that's such a different world. It's got that sitcom-y vibe, but it's really trying to push the envelope in different ways. And what has that experience been like? And what are like fan reactions to it? I mean, you must be getting noticed now or recognized now that we're back in the world walking on streets, although you're right. In LA, maybe you don't really walk on streets. But like, what has that felt like in terms of authenticity?
Oh, it's been an honor. It's been wonderful because, you know, Ebony Olua is just frank and just Nigerian. And when I auditioned for it, one of my sisters had told me that she had seen Gina Yashere. She plays Kemi. She's also one of the creators. She's a stand-up. And she said, oh, I've seen several of her shows. You should watch it. And I watched one and I said, oh, I totally get the mother perspective. Mm-hmm. It's been really great because a lot of Africans, a lot of Nigerians have said something to me. They're like, oh my goodness, I love her mother. I love the way you play the mother. And then one of my sisters was living in Samoa, and she's always been very international. And people, her friends from Thailand, her friends from other areas of Africa, her other Asian friends from Malaysia, they're all like, yes, we understand this type of parenting. So it's even more universal than just Nigerian. Mm-hmm. And that's been really interesting to discover that people appreciate it and they recognize it.
And the universality of it. That's a word. What about the accent? Were you nervous about it? Had you done it before? Did you coach with it? Because you want to get that right.
Oh, absolutely. I had done it before, but I'm in the show with actual Nigerians and Bayo, who plays Goodwin, he's the dialect coach.
Okay.
So I always check in with him. I always have at least a good 10, 20 minutes with him. And then that's it. Especially because it's such an international audience.
Yeah.
I really have to get it right.
It needs to be authentic. Well, yeah, it is. I mean, you sound perfect, but I wondered if it was just something that came naturally to you or are you good with accents in general?
I'm pretty good with accents, but Yoruba is a very tough language. Like my father speaks some of it, but only for certain rituals. And so even in learning it, it's there's an inflection that is very specific, you know? So in my work, I like being authentic anyway. So I really was going hard for it. And I'm getting it now. But still, every now and then, somebody might come whisper something to me. I'm like, okay, right. Great.
Saida, I just love how many people get to see you on their screens weekly in their home. Your work has always been just so deep and so layered and nuanced and just so human. Like every time I would see you in a play, I'd be like, I feel like I'm watching a documentary. Like your ability to just live and behave in whatever the given circumstances are, it's really breathtaking. I mean, you're just such a uniquely, uniquely gifted artist.
Thank you.
And so now, like, that millions of people get to behold that beauty and that originality and that artistry. It's just, I'm glad you chanted.
Thank you.
Manifested for all of us. Before I let you go, I know that you were like, oh, she's going to ask me this, but I am going to ask you this. Is there a little known fact that you can share about Saida?
I think I've shared this once before, but I have a little bit of an adventurous side to me. I went to Barbados years ago, and on the way to the airport, stopped off to hang out at a beach, and I jumped off of a cliff into the water twice.
That is scary.
It was very scary. Yeah. I didn't think about it at the time, but and then
you just
I also,
did it.
I just did it, and then.
But then you
I
did it like, again.
Yeah, I did it again. I don't know.
Like just to make sure, like, okay, can I do it again? What made you do it again? It was fun.
Why not? It was fun.
Why not?
And I surprised myself. I also had a Groupon around 10 years ago. I had a Groupon for skydiving in San Diego, and I did it. And I didn't tell anybody. And so I jumped 13,000 feet. It was wonderful.
Was it?
Yeah.
Would you do that again? If a Groupon party, if they had a Groupon, if there's a 2-for-1, I will do it with you.
Okay, good.
I will do it with you.
But we have to do it with where there's a view. You can't just do it over some open field. No.
Okay.
I got to see the mountains and the ocean.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. I adore you.
I adore you too. And I got to tell you, when Dominic told me you started this podcast, I was like, maybe one day I'll get to be on it. So I'm so honored. Thank you so much, Ilana.
It was today.
Yes.
This was today. I love you. And thank you for this time and this conversation.
I love you too. I had a great time.
One more thing. I keep getting emails asking how to donate to the podcast. First of all, thank you in advance. You are the kindest humans. Just go to littleknownfactspodcast.com/donations. That is where you donate. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. This episode of Little Known Facts was edited by Nicholas Klar. We record in New York City. The Little Known Facts theme song was written and recorded and sung by Georgia Famusa with backup vocals by Caleb Famusa. Thank you.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.